Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
It's Recalibration Matrix. I'm Jay Larson. Joining us is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
I switched it up on you, Greg.
You did, and I totally failed my delivery. It's like when you're going up steps and like one of them is like half an inch tall or short and you trip.
Like, what's going on here?
I hate it.
I had to get back at you for like letting out this loud burp just before we started the record. So
don't share my burp, Jay. Jeez.
Sorry, that's private info.
It's private.
Should have respected that.
It's secret.
So what's been going on with Greg?
So this week the store I've been going to finished a league for Crisis Protocol. And I posted it up on our Discord because I had a lot of really cool thoughts on it. But so basically this league, we did it for 8 weeks. And you basically, what's most important is earning points. And so you get 3 points if you win a game, which is, you know, that's a lot. But then there's a lot of other ways to earn points. So like one way to win a point is by knocking out the opponent's leader. Another way is like putting 3 status effects on one character. Another way is use 10 power on a character in one activation. So, you know, like lots of little fun, like achievements or challenges.
That sounds almost like in War Machine parlance, like who's the boss achievements that you're going out and trying to achieve.
Yeah. And I think they did that. They did a similar system whenever they did like the fun event days. Like, I forget what were some of their fun ones? Like the Winter Rampage or whatever, like when they do those. It was fun. It was really good. And so I ended 5-3, but so 18 people were in the league and I was 14th because I had so few points. Because I took Criminal Syndicate and Spider Foes because I felt like it. And so I couldn't put a ton of status effects down. And I wasn't super beady. Like I could target down a leader, but generally I was just trying to win my games. And like the person who got number one had a 5-3 win ratio. So it's like, yeah, you just it was
what,
really cool.
What affiliations were they doing that were good at the achievements?
You know what? I haven't seen it and I haven't played that person.
Mm.
But we have a lot of Black Order in Asgard in our meta.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nobody played Wakanda, which I was surprised about. And the only reason I didn't play Web Warriors is because I've been playing so much Web Warriors, I needed a palate cleanser.
Sure, yeah. Well, we, just recently we're still not doing events at Gameopolis, and we get pretty regular questions like, you know, when are you guys going to do events? And so I had a meeting with my manager and we finally have a reopening plan instead of just like a indefinite, like at some point in the future.
Yeah.
For events. But we're going to 2 weeks after the last employee has their final vaccination, we're going to start doing events again. So
sounds good.
That'll be nice. And it feels like it's after, you know, how long this has all been going on. It's nice to at least have that. Feels like it's not super far out.
Yeah.
It does kind of suck though. We our collectible card room, we have two guys that are kind of dedicated working in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, his sister that he lives with, came down with COVID.
Oh, no.
And so he, you know, isolated, and then he started showing symptoms too. And which sucks. It didn't spread to anyone at Gameopolis. But it also kind of sucks. Like, we've got 240 boxes of battle styles that are arriving this week and next week, and a bunch of them were opening, and so it's kind of sucks to be short staffed on the collectible card game front right now. But
and that's Pokemon, right?
Yeah, Pokemon. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's I'm in. Normally, I know all the Pokemon things, but I chose to remove myself from the card game like about 2 years ago.
Like, if that's the case, like, are you aware just like how you probably are, but like just how crazy the card game is right now?
It's crazy. Yeah, I saw like most stores are. I have never seen most stores charging above MSRP. Like, in my experience, if a store charges above MSRP, everybody lambasts them.
Right.
And is like, fuck y'all, what's wrong with you? But like, every store has been like, y'all, it's so limited, and like, we are in so much trouble. And like, the new set came out or whatever just recently. And
Shining Fates. I told like every distributor, like, you know, put down quantities for like hundreds of boxes from each distributor, and got like, you know, 20 or 30 or something, right?
Yeah. Like, people were lining up outside Walmart and Target. So it was supposed to launch the right after the freeze happened here in Houston.
Oh, my God.
And I've heard from some game stores that during the freeze, like the day when it snowed and everything froze, the game stores were getting calls from people asking if they had arrived yet. And it's like, nobody's there. they were like routing the calls to their homes. They're like, no, we're not getting.
Guess what? UPS isn't doing anything.
Yeah, it's like, what? But like, that's how crazy it is, man. Yeah. And like, the demand is so high for Pokemon right now. And
yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I don't know if it's because YouTubers jacked the secondary market basically and made it insanely expensive for like rares.
I
sold a damaged card I've been holding on to for like $190 on eBay. That's how bad it is. Like, my terribly damaged Mewtwo Delta is worth something still.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I mean, I guess hooray for game store owners. I don't know.
I mean, I am glad, because people have to buy Pokemon cards from game stores, basically, because like, the Targets and Walmarts aren't able to just monopolize all the sales, which is sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're happy when you get product.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times where like, literally every distributor is sold out of product.
Yeah.
But I guess before we dive into the stories or this comic, Brian and I were, you know, trying to decide what movie to watch together, and I threw out several possibilities at him, and the one he said, oh, we should do this one. We ended up rewatching Deadpool and Deadpool 2, and like, they're such funny movies. They're so well done. Well, some of the CGI isn't amazing per se, but it's just kind of crazy to me how many good comic book movies there are now.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of bad ones as well, but you know, I mean, I guess DC keeps churning them out, so
well, yeah, but I mean, there's also, there have always been bad comic book movies that like, people didn't realize were comic book movies, like Men in Black and Mystery Men. And then there's the, like, you know, someone asked me for my favorite like, comic book movie before the Marvel movie started, and I said History of Violence, and they were like, wait, what?
So I we need to back up a little bit. Did you just say that Mystery Men is a bad movie?
I'm gonna backpedal. and say it's a fine movie. It's good. It's fun. I mean, it's a comedy, right? And it does that job. It's a really good comedy, but is it a good movie, like, with a good story and everything? No, but it's a good comedy.
Oh my God, Greg.
Jay, it's good.
It's amazing. It's so amazing.
It's silly. It's just, it's silly.
Yeah, it is silly. Yes, I will agree with that.
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I'm being like snobby Greg, where I'm like, you know.
You're not taking my hobby seriously enough.
I mean, okay, it is definitely a, like, they had fun making it, and it's fun to watch.
Okay, I'm just
coming up against, like, I don't want to say it's a good movie, but, like, dude, I watch it every couple years still. I like it, but is it good?
It is.
Okay.
Emphatically.
I'm not going to fight you on this because I like it, but I don't agree.
Okay. One other, I guess, semi-funny story is, so, well, one of the things that Brian and I will do a lot of times is we'll watch movie series, you know, from the start. And so, like, if there's a new Mission Impossible movie coming out, you know, we'll watch all of the ones leading up to the one coming out over, right? And so, like, I explained to Brian, like, as much as I could, what was happening with the story behind the Snyder Cut and what it was and why it was coming out, etc. And he's like, oh, we should watch the DC Extended Universe movies and go through the whole thing and be ready for the Snyder Cut to come out. And so, because I love my husband, I said yes.
You're a good husband.
But the thing that was kind of funny was that he looked up this, you know, watch the DCEU in chronological order thing. And how do you start out with Wonder Woman and then Wonder Woman 1984? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, like before we dived into it, I was like, well, there is a problem that, like, we can't watch Wonder Woman 1984 right now. And he's like, what? Why not? And I was like, well, when HBO Max does the simultaneous release, new releases, they're on HBO Max for like 30 or 31 days, and then they're not available on there until later. And I was like, we could technically rent Wonder Woman 1984 on Amazon for $20, but why? And so the prospect of, like, A, having to pay $20 for Wonder Woman 1984, but B, not being able to watch the complete DC Extended Universe was enough to, like, kibosh the entire idea. And so it didn't get off the ground.
Yeah. That's really weird that they don't leave it up.
Yeah, it is, kind of. Did you see that they had, like, a glitch where, like, if you played Tom and Jerry,
you could watch the full that Snyder Cut, yes.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that. It's so strange.
Which part?
The whole they pull, okay, the part where they pull a movie after 30 days after giving it to you on streaming and then want to rent it to you after, I don't know, just having a window for this. I don't like it. It's silly.
Yeah. Like, I'm curious to see how many times I watch Dune in the theater and how many times I watch it at home when it comes out within like that first month.
Yeah.
It's going to come out and it's going to be awful. And I would be so sad.
I mean, I don't want to just like continuously dump on it. I really don't like Man of Steel and I really don't like Batman versus Superman. Why should I expect this movie to be better than those two movies?
I did kind of actually like Man of Steel.
Yeah.
I thought the final fight scene was like about four times as long as it needed to be, but mm-hmm. other than that, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Ish. But anyway, we can move on mm-hmm. and we can talk about the end of this comic arc. Where, again, Jay can say, I kind of liked it-ish.
Ish, okay. So So this is a continuation of the story we read before.
Yes.
Where...
Does it continue on after this, or was it just kind of like a 12-issue story?
So this ended... This story was in 1998, and I looked it up, and the next time we see the Inhumans is in 2006. And okay. it's in a Quicksilver story, which is, like, kind of interesting. So it's... They basically disappeared after this, which... This is kind of the thing with the Inhumans. They've always been like a side story. They've always guest appeared in more popular characters' stories, and they were villains basically. Medusa was, I've said it before, right? Medusa was basically a villain for way longer than she was, you know, the noble queen to Black Bolt and his, you know, his advisor and interpreter and like the in charge of everything. So this is. This comic is kind of the new Inhumans, and like this comic sets the stage for how the Inhumans have been presented since, you know, it was modernizing them in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, I'll get in. So in this, so we finish that, we continue the story, and basically nobody trusts Black Bolt. They're all like, why aren't we attacking? Why aren't we fighting back? And there's a lot of like in almost like political drama that's going on. I think they start issue 7 with there's like a tree man, and he's talking about how wonderful his brother is and how the humans killed his brother, and so by law he is allowed to demand a life basically from the human attackers.
Right.
And Black Bolt and Medusa kind of play this where they kind of like, because he's trying to initiate, we need to attack the humans. And they say, okay, you have to find the specific human that killed your brother, and then we have to give him a trial. That's the law. So so they kind of avert this minor catastrophe of, like, we're not going to attack back. And Black Bolt is still like, you know they can go and kill all the humans. They know they can have a massive show of force and that they can defeat them. And so we get to see, like, Gorgon... Gorgon is the guy with the, like, the goat hooves, and he's kind of drinking, and he's really angry, and he doesn't understand because he's a military leader, and he's like, we need to attack back and fight them away and get them away from our city. And it shows, in the comic, it shows Triton, who's the fish man. He goes to Namor and asks, like, Namor to help, and Namor's like, I'm not going to get involved in your business. And then we get some more backstory for Triton. You know, he's an older man, although we can't tell because he isn't aging like normal. And it shows how he saved a young boy from the sinking of the Lusitania and brought him to safety. And he's like going to the sunk Lusitania to try to reflect on, like, what should I do? Like, I'm in this moral position where I don't know what's right and what's wrong. And so we have this presentation that, like, nobody trusts Black Bolt. Karnak knows what Black Bolt's doing, and Karnak is kind of pushing Black Bolt, hey, reveal the secret. Adelan deserves to know what's going on. Is it time yet? And so while all of this is kind of going on, and this goes on for most of the 6 issues, Black Bolt's brother Maximus kidnaps Medusa and basically is holding her as like a show that Black Bolt isn't strong enough, because Maximus's goals are to weaken Black Bolt's position and try to take over Adelan. And that's kind of his, like, classical villain position, is like, I deserve to be the king, and I'll show it by my evil genius plan. So the humans are continuing, and remember, the humans put a device inside that, like, turns off their shields. And so as the comic goes, it's revealed that this was all planned by Black Bolt with some help from Karnak. And they are basically playing possum and allowing the humans to, like, feel like they're being defeated. And the real plan was to just turn off the shields, let the humans come, and they're going to break a weak point with Gorgon's, his like, he has a really powerful stomp is basically his superpower. So Gorgon will stomp on a weak point that will sink the city. And what Black Bolt and them will do is make it look like the city is destroyed and then teleport it somewhere else so that humans don't know where they are again, because it's kind of the like admitting that the Inhumans can't be available to humans. It's going to lead to horrible conflict. It's going to lead to death. And the Inhumans don't want that. And Black Bolt's big plan is kind of he tricks everybody to play into these. And so Medusa's part is to get captured by Maximus, allow him to cut off her hair so that she can control her hair and destroy his machines so that they can control everything themselves without Maximus interfering. And so Medusa gets captured and like she allows her hair to be cut off and then destroys the machine and the engine so that they can complete their big overarching plan. And so the end of the comic is the humans think that they have accidentally destroyed Adelan, and they're pulling all these like political excuses and saying like, oh, it was these bad guys who did it. Not, you know, we wish we could have saved them. And like everything on Earth kind of goes back to normal. And then it shows that Adelan is now in the in some remote mountain range away from most of humans. Yes. So, Jay.
Yes.
This is a lot of like overarching minor plots that all come together in the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about it? Because there's one that I don't like, but all the rest.
Oh, boy. So just one.
Just one. The only one that I don't like that I think is stupid and pointless is Triton. When Triton goes to Namor, he gives him like a letter, and Namor, and the letter is, hey, Namor, if you don't get involved, we'll give you Atlantis back because we're going to sink it. And you just don't need to get involved and pretend to Triton like you're not going to help us. Because we need to trick Triton. And I'm just like, wait, why do you need to trick Triton? Because he's nowhere near any of this other I don't know. I didn't understand why they had to trick all of the royal family, but I don't know.
Okay, so that one was on my list of things. So that whole issue. So like I was reading that issue and there were just points where I was like, why am I reading a whole comic about the Lusitania? Like, I don't understand. So there was that. Another one that I just really had issues with is that like the one where the crazy brother, what's his name again?
Maximus the Mad.
Yeah. So Maximus the Mad. His comic arc like was just way too rapey for me, so I didn't really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, so I agree with you that there was a lot of like these other things going on to build up this, you know, big reveal, and like I started getting to the point like, okay, so I understand what you're doing. This better be a really amazing effing reveal. And then we get to it and I'm like, oh, that was it. That was, that's what all this was for. So, and part, I don't know, like, so it, here's another, issue I have with it is that like, if you're like this super genius who's doing this, like, 13D chess, like the, so first of all, like, okay, the end thing, like, yes, I can understand why you would like want the humans to think while you're gone, but you're telling me that like the super genius can't come up with a better plan than having his wife get like violated and a bunch of people killed and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I was under the impression that Medusa chose her role in this to go and deal with that by being kidnapped. And they knew how creepy it would be because Maximus used to like date Medusa when they were young. But yeah, okay, Maximus's behavior towards Medusa is rapey. That's pretty clearly gross. But
I say this, but like, it's not like it's that long ago that Game of Thrones was on the air. But I don't think that Marvel would do a comic like that in present day, but like maybe I'm just wrong on that. Like you know a lot more about comics than I do. So
I will say this is published under the Marvel Knights like branding, which mm-hmm. for Marvel was part of it was there is no comics code approval for these comics. They are intended for like mature readers. And for the Punisher line, that means there's like ultra violence and gore. And I think for this one, it means it's more like you spend a lot of time inside characters seeing their own doubts about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like a lot of this is that a lot of the characters are doubting Black Bolt and doubting yes. their society and doubting their own choices in what they're doing. And Black Bolt is like maintaining control while not really directly in like controlling people, but he is like misleading everybody except, I mean, I'm led to believe Karnak and Medusa and Black Bolt are in this together. And
yes, I think
and
so.
They're and like they know everything that's gone on. And a lot of the weirdness to me is that they wrote this comic to be like, you, the reader, aren't going to know. And you're going to be surprised at the end. And the payoff, I think the payoff is good. I think the Black Bolt actually knew everything that was going on. And it was his plan that Maximus would do this because he needed the humans to think it was real. So we needed a reason for the humans to be able to defeat the Inhumans and screw everything up, right? And so it's they like the humans think they shot an artillery shell mm-hmm. onto the point and then sunk and destroyed the city because they think right they Maximus did it and all this, and they knew they had to let Maximus loose. The one thing there, I mean, there's parts of it that don't make sense, right? Like, how did they know Maximus would get loose? Were they just gonna like open his cell if he didn't brain control that kid?
Sure.
There's holes in it, right? It's like
I guess kind of my point is like, it's like kind of this super elaborate plan and that has like a bunch of these kind of like weak pivot points or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it kind of left me feeling like, well, why didn't you just make a better plan? I don't know. Maybe that's,
I think we're supposed to just go with it and accept yeah, the presentation sure. of it. I mean, to me, it feels like The Dark Knight, where if you really analyze it a lot, there's some problems. But it's such a great movie that nobody really stops and considers.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the time, this art was like just incredibly, I think this was just an incredible comic at the time. And maybe we're part of it is that a lot of the more modern comics are, you know, a little bit better about some of the things. And I do right. think this comic could have been told in like 6 issues.
Yeah, yeah. Like when they do the short little story arc about Lockjaw,
mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know much about Lockjaw, but I was expecting or hoping for more than just like than what it did.
I mean, so Lockjaw is a dog still.
Yeah.
Right. Like he is a dog, and he's an extremely intelligent dog with superpowers, and a lot of times he's just a dog, right?
Sure.
So
yeah, I mean, it was
he's definitely like I think you get thoughts from him, and so he's a good boy.
Yeah.
He's very smart, and he's also like, I don't care about these people barking, this is not interesting, I'm gonna go sniff around, you know. And he's like,
I mean, yes, the here's a sample of some of the thought bubbles for Lockjaw. Scratchy scratch.
Dog hungry, get food. Where is food?
Love, woofity woofity, bark, bark, bark.
Yeah, but isn't that fine?
I guess. I don't know. I guess I'm just a curmudgeonly old man. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that he had a chew toy that was the thing from the Fantastic Four, because they were like Fantastic Four enemies. I thought that was really funny.
The other thing, so I texted you about this as I was reading them. One of the things I struggled with, I was struggling to get through these comics.
Okay.
And part of it was just like, it just all felt like kind of dark and kind of like there's these threads that are spread out everywhere. There's not much going on. Like I'm reading about the Lusitania. I don't know why. And after I've read the arc, I still don't know why. And so it was just, there was a little bit of another point where I really felt this was like the issue that was focused on Maximus. Like I would be reading the episode and like just on top of the rapey stuff, like it was just like he was obviously an unlikable character. And so I'd be reading it and just like there's literally no one I'm reading about right now that I like, or and I don't really feel like the story's advancing forward that far.
I mean, Maximus is just a bad guy. Like he's like he is there for Black Bolt to defeat and outwit. It's, I don't know. I really liked the scene where like Black Bolt's just walking up to him and then they like kind of embrace and then he's in chains in the next page. I liked that a lot because it's just like Black Bolt, Maximus knows that Black Bolt could just kill him, right? Yeah. And he's like, all right, I can't beat you. I thought that told a lot. It's really cool to have like an evil brother who also still like can be tender with you sometimes. But yeah, he's definitely like an irredeemable bastard in these. I can't argue with you that it's like way too dark and unenjoyable sometimes.
Yeah.
Did you notice? Okay, so here's something I was thinking about. Did you notice Crystal's daughter in this comic at all?
I don't know.
I think she's only in the very last issue, and I thought that was strange that they just like, because like you were saying, there's no one like likable or relatable.
Uh huh.
And I'm like, it's Crystal. Crystal's the relatable one in the Inhumans. Why didn't they do that? Like, you see her daughter at the very end, and it appears the thing toy is her daughter's Luna. And I was like, why don't we see Crystal or Luna as the, like, these are the relatable ones? The only time we see Crystal is when she's, like, you know, questioning everything about Black Bolt and, like, what they're doing. And, like, I don't know. Because, like, Crystal's is, like, why aren't we saving my sister? What are we doing here? You know, it's...
And actually, this leads to one of the things I planned on asking you. Mm-hmm. So... You know, at the very end, the way they end the arc is, they're trying to, I don't know, I felt a little bit like they were trying to be a little bit more clever than they needed to, but maybe I was just like kind of bitter towards the comic at that time, or I don't know. But basically, they would go through like each of the main characters up through that point and be like, you know, how would you feel if you had been this character and this had happened, or how would you feel, you know, et cetera, and going through each one. Then it ends on Black Bolt. And on the very last page, you know, it's been talking about him, saying, like, how would you feel about, you know, doing the sacrifice with your people in your city, et cetera. And then the last few bubbles says, imagine you had all these lives in your hands, that each and every time you woke to a new day, you had to be prepared to make similar decisions all over again. Imagine that you could save a family by sacrificing a child, but that you had to explain it to the child. What would you say? And it has the picture of, you know, this girl who has the thing in Fantastic Four, the play toy, and she comes up to Black Bolt at the end.
That's Luna. That's Crystal's daughter.
Okay,
so,
like
So that is Black Bolt's niece.
Okay, like I read that last page and I'm like, so I really think they want me to think that something significant is going on, but I really don't have any idea what's going on.
So I think one of the big themes, one of the big themes is impossible choices, right? That like Black Bolt and several of the Inhumans are put in or reflect on these really difficult choices. And it keeps saying, like, what would you do or what would you say for Black Bolt, right? Because Black Bolt feels like he wants to explain himself. So the whole, like,
but he doesn't have a whiteboard. But he doesn't. He's screwed.
But he yeah. And the child, like, there was a child who died, and they have a statue to him at the end of the story earlier, of Rexel, who died in the fighting, right? And so I think it's just trying to, like, reflect on that and, like, how impossibly difficult being the king is, and, like, being the royal family. But it does come off really joyless, doesn't it? I can promise you that none of the other Inhuman comics we're going to read are, like, this tone.
Right, yeah.
And this is, I think, a relic of, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, where comic uh-huh. books were trying. I think part of it as well was, like, they were trying to be seen as, like, more adult and more, like, right. mass market acceptable. And they were trying to figure out the balance, which, you know, I think it's that it should be dependent on the comic, right? Like,
well, I guess maybe that's part of my issue as well, is that, like, so, like, it feels like Marvel, in a way, should just kind of, like, stick with what they're good at. And, like, when I read a Marvel comic, I read something that's a little bit happier or a brighter tone than, you know, some of the other stuff that's available.
Yeah, and you're not going to get that from this comic.
Right, yeah. I mean, have you ever read, I'll be shocked if you haven't, but have you read the Saga comic books?
Yes, I've read Saga.
Yeah. Okay. Like I'm reading those right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's obviously just like a completely different tone than Marvel, and I'm enjoying it a lot, and it's very well done. But I don't know that. Actually, I don't know. It's so well done that I probably wouldn't mind if Marvel put them out, but it would seem weird if Marvel put them out.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a Marvel
story. Can you give a quick plot summary to Saga, Jay?
I mean, it's sure, yeah. I mean, it's Romeo and Juliet in a setting that's similar to Star Wars.
That's not that bad. Good job. With a lot more tits and blood.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Saga. So Saga is written by Brian K. Vaughan. I will read anything he writes. He is great.
Okay.
So, So I feel like I need to defend this comic a little bit.
Okay.
Number one, it really contextualizes and does a very good job of introducing the Inhumans while also showing why they're special and unique in the Marvel universe. They are not like most other Marvel teams. Their closest comparison is probably the X-Men. And mm-hmm. even then, like I love the whole, they can't go into human atmosphere because the pollution is so bad, it will kill them. So they're like these amazingly wonderful, you know, people, but they haven't adapted to modern society, right? They don't have any antibodies against like the flu, and so they have these massive weaknesses because they're so cut off and separated. But at the same time, right, they have a mix of alien technology plus like what have their super scientists made in a couple thousand years. So they're really cool, and they're this really unique science fiction like subset of the Marvel universe. And this comic established that. This comic made the modern Inhumans, and every Inhuman thing we get from here is building off of this comic. And it's a really big deal.
They're like the X-Men if the X-Men had slaves and
Yeah, like, they do a really bad job of explaining how they're not slaves anymore. And the more I like go back and try to figure it out, it's like, no, they're slaves. It's like we have slaves, but we freed them. They just want to keep working for us and right. not getting paid. And it's like, what the fuck, y'all? It's like, yeah, we genetically engineered some people that want to be slaves, and then we freed them, but they kept wanting to work. And you're like, motherfuckers, that's still a slave. What the fuck? Fix them? Fix it. You gotta fix them. It's so bad. Like, that whole part of them is, like, very clear, like, they're not supposed to be relatable. They're supposed to be weird and alien and bad. Like...
Yeah. I do like how... If the X-Men had slaves, and if they made, like, the X-Men made really, really bad schemes and plots, but, yeah, anyway.
Also, if your bloodline isn't good enough, they don't give you superpowers. Not everyone gets to go through Terrigenesis. That's something that's not brought up. So, there are Inhumans that are, like, trying to get their visa to get Terrigenesis, and it's like... Maybe if you have kids with this person, we'll let your kids get Terrigenesis. And they're like, all right, because like the scientific council is like doing eugenics.
Yeah. It was kind of funny, like every time they did some sort of like exclamation, or like instead of being like by God, it would be like by evolution.
I love that.
Yeah, that was good.
Because it is, evolution is what they revere more than anything else. And yeah, it's a very unnatural evolution, but it still is, like, their thing.
Yeah, their worship of science to the extent of being a religion.
It's cool. It's different.
Yeah.
I really like this comic. And so part of my thing is that there's another comic that Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee did that, like, it's the introduction of the Sentry, and it was one of my favorite comics around that time. And they did it in 2000, so, like, right after they did this, they made the Sentry comic series. But I think that the Inhumans was them taking a very unknown, like, Marvel thing and trying to make it modern. And it's funny to me that they took it, and then at the end they were like, and then they go away. And, like, we won't see them for about 6 years in Marvel Comics.
They really did go away.
I mean, that's what they killed them, Jay. They killed all the Inhumans, like, 2 years ago. They're all dead now.
I mean, it's the comics, Greg.
Yeah, I know. The comic was called Death of the Inhumans.
Well, there you go. So, do you have, I guess, let's wrap it up on this episode.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to say about this arc before we move on to the next episode?
I like it. I give it a thumbs up. I think all of your complaints are valid, but I think it's important enough to the Inhumans, and I think it's still enjoyable, even though most of the characters are unrelatable, morose demigods.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll stick with what I said earlier, that it's like okay-ish. So, all right, so next episode, we're going to be talking about Kingpin, correct?
Yeah! I have so many Kingpin games under my belt. I'm really excited. And so because we're doing Kingpin, we're going to be reading Daredevil issues 227 to 233. That's a really big, really like crazy over the top story where Kingpin gets Daredevil's secret identity and does bad things. So it's issues 227 to 233 of Daredevil. If you're looking on Marvel Unlimited, it's Daredevil 19 1964, which it's the original Daredevil, and it's 227 to 233.
Okay, so sign up for our Patreon. It has a new low price. You'll be able to listen to our bonus episode where we're going to talk about Medusa in game, and we're going to talk about the finale of WandaVision.
So excited.
So stay tuned and smash the subscribe button, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Like and subscribe.